Welcome to It Just Makes Sense,
a podcast by two easily distracted, higher educated former lovers
that explores all the unpopular opinions, conspiracy theories, and cult leaders that make you want to scream,
It Just Makes Sense.
I'm Sam Smith.
I'm Jeff Seifert.
And on this episode, we're talking about an episode of Murdered by Morning, Acting on Evil, covering the murder of Jesse Blodgett.
Who?
Honestly, who knows? But once again, it starts like they all do.
With a 911 call.
And it's a woman screeching. She's cold. Oh my God, she's cold. And you can hear her saying it looks like strangulation marks.
Wait. She's cold? Or the body she's touching is cold?
The body she's touching is cold.
Oh, it's like that seems pretty silly to call 911 because you're cold. But anyways.
And then it cuts to the intro. We're off to Hartford, Wisconsin. Population 6,690.
Wow.
Even though it's a small populated town, it is filled with a lot of art enthusiasts and community theater lovers. There's not a lot of anything else to do there.
Gay.
The community theaters in town, everyone goes.
Wild.
Like, I'm moving there. It sounds like a great time.
I'm not a huge theater person, so I, whatever.
On July 14th, 2023... 2013.
Like, oh my God, excuse me. No, that was last year or 6 months ago.
It's opening weekend of Fiddler on the Roof.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match.
I know I've said this
catch
before.
Catch me a catch.
I was the matchmaker, my eighth grade production of
Fiddler. I totally can see it. You're a Yenta?
Yenta.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. But I cannot sing for the life of me. Like, I don't know how I got that role. She doesn't really sing much, though. The matchmaker herself.
Is the character kind of stocky and homely?
Yeah, 100%. Mm. That's what I'm saying, especially when I was in 8th grade. I get it. 100%.
Yeah, I saw that with AFK and her family. It was delightful.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Tavia, what a good show. So anyways, the actors are pumped for opening night.
Holla!
They had an amazing performance. And after... Oh, and it seemed like all of the actors within the show are like good friends. So prior to this play occurring, there had only been two murders in Hartford in the last 100 years.
Wow.
But then, what? July 15th, 2013, is when a third murder occurred.
Was it on stage?
This shook the small town where everyone knew everyone, and it was a tight-knit group of friends that all performed in the local theater.
They were
this
shooketh.
The group of friends, okay? Kelly was an artistic musician. Jesse spends a lot of time experimenting with music. Ian loved straight music and poems. Jacqueline was the eccentric artist. And Dan was just like the cool guy, funny and charismatic.
They all sounds had their- like a bit like a sitcom.
Right? I know. They all had their own hobbies and interests, but they were a close-knit group of friends. So now it's 9:35, the night of the opening show, and this group of kids had just rocked the house down, and they wanted to celebrate.
Okay.
At the cast party. A time to decompress, have some fun, great food, good people, and music.
Make out.
My favorite cast parties were at Denny's, but this was also in high school. So, yeah. You know what I mean?
I don't remember where ours were.
Yeah. We had one, like, they usually were at, like, our big ones for the school musical were always, like, the cast parties were at, like, a... where you'd have prom, like a hall.
Oh.
And then you would just go to like Denny's after.
Yeah, I don't like remember.
So it was a good group. There were some new people from the cast that came to the party. Randy, he was a new guy in town, about 40 years old, and he was a dancer in the play.
Were any of them tardy for the party?
Yeah. Jerry Becker was the director of the show. And a little pretentious. We're getting a full set of characters.
Well, you know, I mean, musical theater, pretentious.
I know, right? Like, what are you going to do?
There's going to be one in there.
So around 11:17 p.m., as the party goes on, the crowd starts to thin out. And that's when all the fun games start to be played.
Like what?
They're about to play Never Have I Ever.
My like, favorite.
Okay. But also, these people are like
40.
Like, you're that's like, weird. I'm like, what? Like, I think Jesse and her group of friends were maybe between like 19 and 22.
Yeah.
So they're younger, but like, weird. I just find it weird.
I'm not going to make Never Have I Ever with a 19 year old.
Right?
That's weird.
They played it as a way to get to know everyone, joke around, learn secrets. And of course, what? Flirting's going on.
Yeah.
Kisses are exchanged. Some people are sitting on each other's laps.
What is happening?
Like, give me all the small town tea.
All the tea.
But some of the older guys in the party are starting to get really close to younger girls.
Shocker.
There, making them uneasy.
Creeper.
And the older men were not picking up on that. So it's now around 12:50 a.m. and Jesse and a friend decide to get out of the pool and leave. They hug everyone goodbye and make plans to see a group of friends the next day.
Did I miss that part? Did you bear the lead? They were all in the pool?
Well, some of them were in the pool. Like, they were all hanging out around the area. Oh, okay. It looked like there was, like, a pool with, like, a fire pit by it and, like, you could hang on the edge. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The next day arrives and that's when it takes us to the 911 call we heard at the beginning. Jesse's mom returned home from lunch at work and found Jesse in her bed, blue. It looked like she had been strangled. She was 19 years old. The police rush to the home and find Jesse unresponsive in her bed. They pulled her to the center of the bedroom to try to resuscitate her, but no luck. She had been dead for quite some time. Around 8 a.m. that morning, when Joy, her mother, left for work, she called for Jesse but didn't get a response. She didn't think it was weird because Jesse was at the cast party till late the night before. But when Joe got home from work on lunch and didn't hear from her again, that's when she went into Jesse's room and found her. Jesse's dad got a call that morning at work to find out that his daughter had passed. He was in complete disbelief. The police immediately think this is a suspicious death.
I don't like that term.
Why?
She didn't pass. She was murdered.
Well, correct. What do you want from me? Sorry.
Just saying. Give her the credit she's due. She was killed.
So they first went to the scene thinking it was a suicide, possibly overdose. But they did not expect to find Jesse with severe ligature marks all over her neck.
Mm.
This was one of the worst scenes the police officers in that area had seen. But also it was the first death in 100 years.
So obvious. Yeah.
The family couldn't see Jesse. Her room was a crime scene. They had to protect her now to find out what had happened to her. The police start the investigation. They begin questioning everyone who knew Jesse. Her mom right away mentions to police officers how when Jesse got home from the party, Jesse told her mom how disrespectful the older men had been at the party and how uncomfortable it made her.
Gross.
Joy tells police that Jesse told her, "I'm not sure why older men act like that, but we're not going to solve it tonight, so let's just go to bed." I mean, truth.
I mean, we do know why they act like that, and we're not going to stop it. Unfortunately.
So police now need more information on this cast party. They also found Jesse's journal. She did have an entry on the night of the cast party and about how uncomfortable she felt with some of the people there. So the police start questioning everyone who was at the cast party. They start with Kelly, who was Jesse's closest friend. Kelly gave insight to the police about everyone on the cast, but specifically Randy. She said that Randy had been flirting with Jesse over several cast parties. He was in his 40s. And in a long-term relationship with a woman in the city.
He was the pretentious one?
No, he was the newer guy who was like in his 40s and in the cast as a dancer.
Okay.
But he's in a long-term relationship with a woman in the city.
Mm.
But several cast members talked about him flirting with Jesse. So they wanted to bring Randy in for questioning. But word had quickly spread throughout town that something was happening at Jesse's house. People saw police cars there with police tape, so her friends started surrounding her house to try to find out what's going on. Like, I'm also confused because if they started questioning with Kelly, wouldn't she know that Jesse was dead? But whatever.
Yeah, that is weird.
Right? So police tell her friends that Jesse is gone. Are they allowed to do that?
What do you mean?
Like, the police, once their friends started to show up at, like, the crime scene tape to be like, what's going on? The police were like, she's dead. Are they allowed to release that information?
Well, yeah. I think so.
Okay. Her friends were in shock because they were just with Jesse hours before. Again, I'm confused why Kelly didn't tell anyone because I would literally be texting everyone I know.
Seriously.
Right? Her friends stayed the night with her parents, just sharing stories and talking about Jesse, kind of like holding their own vigil. But her friends were like, who could have done this? They didn't think it could have been possible with anyone they knew. The police finally tracked down Randy after about 26 hours since the death. Randy said that him and Jesse were just friends. But the night of Jesse's death,
what?
He was supposed to go to work that night and didn't.
What?
However, they determined that he had a good alibi and the reason for not being at work. So this cleared Randy as a suspect, but they don't say what it was.
They don't tell you the alibi?
No. So the police were like, what the fuck? That was our biggest lead. So they turned back to her journal, hoping that Jesse's own words would help shed some light on who could have killed her. And there are a few people that she mentions quite often.
Who?
There's one person who also made inappropriate comments to her in the past in the cast. Jerry, the director of the show, the pretentious asshole.
Like how, can we like hear the comments? Like can you, does she say what they were? Just wondering.
But then there was Dan. They had dated years earlier, but they had found journal entries recently where Jesse said that she was flown for a loop when Dan tried to kiss her again, and it brought up a ton of old emotions. So the police were following these two leads when they get a break in the case.
What?
On July 16th, they get a phone call from another agency investigating an incident that turned their investigation a little bit sideways, but gave them a good lead. 2 days before the murder, on July 12th, there was a young lady out for a jog when she was confronted by a man with a knife who tried to attack her. When she tried to fight him off, like she suffered cuts to her hand, but she was able to get away.
Okay.
Like she was able to fight him off and run. She was also able to get a good description of the vehicle that he drove and of the individual himself. Based on the vehicle information, it sparked a memory with the Washington County Sheriff's Department, who had previously gotten a call while patrolling the park and seen that same vehicle.
Okay.
The cop ran the license plate of that vehicle at the time to have it saved in case it was ever needed again. Well, isn't that crazy?
Can they do that?
I guess. So they ran the license plate and it came up to an older couple, but digging a little deeper, they found out that this couple had a younger son, Daniel Bartlett. The same Dan who was mentioned in Jesse's journal, her ex-boyfriend and good friend.
What?
The same Dan who was in her parents' house the day that Jesse was found dead, sharing memories and hugging everyone.
Well, I mean, that's what you see on SVU and Law & Order Regular, that the assailant comes back.
He got a call. So Dan got a call during this vigil while he was with Jesse's parents from the police to come in for questioning about this other case of the girl jogging and not Jesse. He told everyone there it was clearly mistaken identity, but he left to go talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
So Jan went down to the police station and he told the police that he had just come from Jesse's house and that he was with her parents. The police asked him if he had any knowledge about an incident that happened at the park. He says no, that he never even goes to that park. But someone reported Dan's minivan there multiple times at the park. So Dan, he's clearly being untruthful. Yeah, he like apparently went to the park all the time.
That's weird.
I think to like stalk women.
Yeah.
The police are like, listen, your car was out there and had been out there several days in a row. So just tell us the truth. What happened? You went after that girl, right? Like, why did you do it? What went on? And Dan just says, I don't know. And they said, why did you go after her? And he said, I wanted to scare someone. I ran at her. I knocked her down and I scared her.
Sir.
But the police were like, he had a plan. He wanted to see if he could get away with it. But then she fought back. So like he thought that he could just like overcome her and put her into the van. But she fought back. So the detectives are like, okay, we now need to talk about Jesse. So they asked him about Jesse, and he was like, I mean, yes, we used to date, but we're good friends. That's it. They asked him what happened to her if he was at the house that night. So he knew that she had passed and she was murdered. And he said, I think someone raped and murdered her, and then just starts sobbing. What's interesting is the fact that he said raped was big to the police
because at that point
they hadn't released that information. So with that, Dan became a suspect in her death and arrested for the attack at the park. The detectives called Washington County and told them about the comments about Jesse. So when they sent him over to Washington County for booking, they brought him right in for questioning again about Jesse's murder. They asked him if his relationship with her was more than friends or hoping to be more than friends. And Dan just said, I don't know. The detectives are like, typically when you say you don't know if you're more than friends or not, you want to be more than friends.
Or right? you are more than friends. And you're trying to downplay it. Yeah.
He said that his supposed relationship he had with Jesse, which had developed since he had dropped out of school. Like he said that they did have a relationship. He had dropped out of school and they started hanging out more, but they were keeping it a secret because he was still seeing another woman and he didn't want to hurt that woman's feelings.
Wow.
What a dog.
What a
dog. He said that they had never had sex, but they did fool around, and they had seen each other several times over the last several months, but nothing that really signified that they were in an intimate or committed relationship. I mean, it couldn't be that committed. You were seeing someone else.
Well, he said that.
Yeah.
Okay, for sure.
The cops were like, okay, this also clears that, like, they were just saying, like, it's clear that this kid's an actor in theater because he would make noises like he was crying, but there was, like, not a single tear. Like, they could tell he was just, like, putting on a show, right? So he was the primary suspect really quickly. They asked him if he ever thought of surprising Jesse and showing up at her house, and he said no, and he had no idea what happened to Jesse. So they asked where he was the morning of Jesse's murder, and he said he was at Woodlawn Park. But remember how he said he had never goes to the park?
Right.
He said he had been at several different parks in the area and then just went home. So the cops
knew. Several different parks in the area?
It's so weird.
You fucking creep.
So the cops knew that they had surveillance cameras at most of these parks. So they were able to get that video. And it does show him at the park that morning Jesse was murdered around 12 o'clock. But Jesse was murdered around 10. So it's possible he attacked her and then went right to the park. The surveillance video shows him walking into a bathroom and then quickly walking out and getting into his car. The cops believe they had thrown things from Jesse's murder in the garbage or somewhere else in the park, so they had to go look. They brought all 25 cans of garbage from that specific park into the police station, and in one of the garbage bags, what? They found a cereal box full of ropes, lingerie, a big ball of tape, and a homemade ball gag and clothes with blood on them. They brought all this to the medical examiner, and he looked at the ropes and other bindings to see if it matched the marks on Jesse's body.
Did it?
They were consistent. From there, they were able to get a search warrant for Dan's property, and one of the items found in the van was a book about strangulation homicide. They found his laptop with internet searches on it asking about serial killers and their ties to parks.
What a dummy.
He was obsessed with reading about serial killers. In one video, he watched a man break into a house, sexually assault a woman, and strangle her. At the end of the video, he puts her into the bathtub and washes her. That became significant because when Joy found Jesse, she said that her hair was wet. So they think this is the video that gave Dan the idea for Jesse's murder. They're still testing at this point all the forensic evidence from the park to see if they can tie anything back to Dan. It's now been 19 days since the murder, and Dan is the only suspect. But will the DNA prove that he was the murderer? The DNA came back, and the DNA in each piece of physical evidence came from two people and two people only, Jesse and Dan. All the evidence from the cereal box had their DNA all over it.
Really?
The case against him was built. I mean, this was a slam dunk case, right?
Yeah, it sounds like it to me.
July 31st, 2013, Dan was charged with first-degree murder of Jesse Blodgett. Her friends and family were shocked. They were like, he was a good friend of ours. Like, he ran within their small group.
Yeah.
Right? Like, was amongst them. Her one friend said it made her think back to a story Jesse told her about Dan when one day she was sleeping in her bed and she woke up and found Dan just standing there staring at her. And it freaked her out.
Could you imagine?
Could you imagine? And she's like, her friend is like, now looking back, should I have done something? But it's like, what?
What are you going to do?
And you never would have thought that would lead to him murdering her.
If I woke up and somebody was uninvitedly standing there watching me sleep, first I'm calling 911. I'm
calling 911 immediately.
And grabbing whatever thing I can hit him with.
So even without motive, detectives have enough to map out what actually happened to Jesse the night leading up to her murder.
What? What is it?
So they think July 14th was the production of Fiddler on the Roof that Jesse was in. At conclusion of the play, they had the after party, and around 12:30, Jesse got home and she talked a bit with her mom, Joy, wrote in her journal, and went to bed. Around 8 a.m., Joy stuck her head into Jesse's room to see how she was doing and saw her sleeping and didn't want to wake her up and left for work. Dan knew the house. Dan knew the door would be open. That's also an issue. Lock your fucking doors. And no one else would be there. So around 10 a.m., Dan came in, went up the stairs to the second floor and into Jesse's room. He tied Jesse up, he sexually assaulted her, and then strangled her to death. Once he murdered her, he cleaned her up and put her back in bed and then drove off to Woodlawn Park. But like, why?
Yeah,
Especially if they were supposedly dating, right?
Right.
But a lot of his friends said that Dan did not handle rejection well. And they had no idea about this relationship. So they wonder if Dan in his head was like making all of this up and that Jesse rejected him and that just caused him to spiral and do what he did.
What?
Like none of Jesse's good friends were like, Jesse never once told us that she was seeing Dan at any, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, so on October 14th, 2014, the trial begins. 15 months after the murder, Jesse's family was there for every minute of it, as were all of her friends. The jury was out for 2.5 hours.
Guilty.
What do you think?
Guilty, guilty, guilty.
Guilty of first degree homicide, sentenced to life in prison, no chance of parole. During his sentence hearing, he, like, Dan looked directly at Blodgett's family members and denied killing her. He said, Buck, Joy, I can't give you the reasons you were looking for. There's no hiding from yourself in a tiny concrete cell. This jumpsuit that I'm wearing, these shackles don't make me guilty. I know there's evidence that I can't refute that would make you believe that I'm guilty, Bartlett said. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. It.
So the judge gave him, like, stepped in after he had said that. That's why he got life in prison with no chance of parole. Because he's like, if you're not going to admit what you did or at least give the family members a chance to, like, hear that, like, for you to apologize or show remorse, then you're going to have no chance of parole. Also, people were saying if he gets out, he will do this again. Because he clearly has, like, attacked one woman, did this to Jesse. Like, there's no proof where he would be a serial killer, I think.
For sure.
100%.
They absolutely shouldn't let him out.
I just don't understand how people can, like, sit in the room with the parents and, like, console them. That's wild.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
And I know this happens a lot. This isn't unusual. It's just insane to me that people can, like, psychopaths.
It's some real sociopathic behavior.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see anything wrong with what you did.
Right.
And then, like, it's also, like, what is that phrase, like, for like a firefighter that sets fires and then so he can put him out, like,
oh,
like a nurse that like kills people but try to bring him back, like,
yeah, like the, like, savior phrase, complex.
Yeah, there's like a phrase for it.
Oh, I didn't know,
kind of
that.
The same idea, like you kill her and then like
right
consoling the parents.
Right.
crazy.
So I know that was kind of short and sweet, but I thought it was a murder story, not good alone, but a true crime.
I get it.
Yeah, you know,
I get it.
So let us know what you think, guys. Let us know the following. If you were ever in a community play, what were you and how did it go? And do you think it's psychopathic what he did?
Yeah. Until next time.
Bye.